Hello and welcome to the Check-In Podcast. I'm Isabella Paxton, and this is where we check in together for community, connection, and conversation over the airwaves. We're just coming off of one of the most tumultuous presidential election seasons in history, and you might be taking a rest from the political season, but in reality, politics doesn't stop. What happens in our nation's capital and also in our state capital in Jefferson City affects our lives all throughout the year. In Boone County, with over 120,000 registered voters, a little more than 2,000 actually voted for state legislature in early April. While millions of people voted in presidential elections, the turnout for local and state elections are significantly smaller. Are you up to date with your local politics? Do you know how to be? Are you involved in our political system in other ways? So much about what happens in our lives gets decided in the Missouri legislature, and it is very much in session right now. So today, neighbors, we want to hear about the issues close to your heart and what you would like to see our Missouri legislators do about them. And are you involved, and in what ways, with the political process right now? Have you ever visited the Capitol? Let us know how you're involved in the political process and what you want from your state legislators. If anything we say resonates with you, leave us a voicemail at 833-560-1329 or tweet us at checkin_KBIA to join the conversation. Stay tuned to the end of the podcast to hear an exclusive interview between me and Mark Horvitt, director of the University of Missouri's State Government Reporting Program, as he answers more of my questions and yours. But first, to Janet.
This is The Check-In. I'm Janet Saidi. Thank you for joining us today. We are going to talk about the 2021 Missouri State Legislative Session. We are currently in session. There are some very important issues that affect your life and my life that are working their way through the Missouri State Legislature. We are going to break down some of those issues. We have a couple of check-in producers that also work in the Capitol. We're going to hear from one of them, maybe even a couple of them today. We are also going to hear from Mark Horvitt, who is a Missouri School of Journalism professor, but longtime reporter. He's been with us on the check-in before, and he covers the Capitol. So we're going to hear from them on kind of what it's like to be on the front lines, but we want to hear from you. How do you stay involved? Some things that our team members have been saying is that it's very easy to miss everything going on in the Missouri legislature. That's not a popular thing to say, but the fact is you don't hear a lot of journalists saying that. But the fact is a lot of citizens can go every day, day after day, and have no idea what is being decided in the Missouri legislature. You kind of have to find it. You have to be listening for it. Hopefully, you know, everybody here listens to KBIA, connects with KBIA. So hopefully you're getting, up to date on the legislature regularly. But how do you know what's going on? Let us know. Are you very much involved? I know that some of our listeners are wandering, maybe I should say bombarding the corridors of the state capitol sometimes on their various issues. And some of you join us on the check-in. We're going to be talking about some really serious issues on the check-in today. Going through the legislature right now, a ban on chokeholds. And this is, if you're just listening to the news at the top of the hour, there you're listening, the Derek Chauvin trial underway. This is a very important issue, something that's making its way through state legislatures and through cities, including the city of Columbia. These conversations happen. What is your thinking on that? Are you invested in that? Let us know what you think, 573-882-4991. We are also going to be talking about Medicaid expansion. We're going to be talking about charter schools and education. It just doesn't get more important to our lives, really. Let me welcome first, we're going to talk with Mark Horvitt this hour, and you might have questions or comments for a longtime journalist covering the legislature. Let me welcome our check-in producer, Hannah Franz, into this discussion. Hannah has been helping us with the discussions as we prep for this show and this conversation. And Hannah is a first-time reporter in a Capitol building, and we were just curious about what that is like. In fact, we've been hearing some of Hannah's perspective as we prepped for this, so we just said, hey, Hannah, come on the show and talk to us. So Hannah, welcome to the check-in.
Hi, Janet. Thanks for having me on.
You're always with us, but now you're on the other side of the mic, so it's really nice to have you here. So as we said, you're a first-time reporter in the Capitol. Can you just tell us, Hannah, what has been What is has it been like to, for the first time, walk through the corridors as a reporter in Missouri and Jeff City?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I have not really been super involved in government or politics previous to this legislative session that I'm reporting on. And so I really didn't know what to expect going in. It's definitely a little bit intimidating sometimes. You know, it's this very big, ornate building.
Yes.
And, you know, it's got a very serious, ceremonial air to it. So, you know, being a young reporter, walking through those hallways, going up those flights of stairs, surrounded by, you know, senators and representatives, making really big decisions, it definitely doesn't go unnoticed by me.
Well, Hannah, I love what you say, because, you know, the fact is, and again, you know, you don't hear journalists say this very often. That is an intimidating place. It is a place that you can be very proud of, the Capitol. And in fact, I think a lot of people don't know that, and you can tell us, Hannah, and our guest Mark Horvath can also confirm this, but you can walk in the Capitol. Anybody can walk in and visit the Capitol. It is your Capitol, listeners, neighbors in the check-in. It is ours. It's yours and mine. But it is intimidating at the same time. What do you see a lot of people, Hannah, everyday people visiting the Capitol and testifying at hearings?
Yeah, in my experience, I haven't actually seen that many just, you know, normal everyday people. In the hearings that I cover, usually most of the people who are testifying are lobbyists for organizations, representatives of school boards, you know, people with positions of power. It's more rare for me to see someone who has just come to testify, you know, to represent themselves, their children, their family, their community. I don't see that as much. And when I do, I'm always struck by it. You know, it's such a big time drain, honestly, to come to the Capitol to testify. I mean, we're talking about, this is Jefferson City, and a lot of the people are coming from, you know, St. Louis or Kansas City. That's at least 4 hours driving time. And, you know, you might have to take an entire day off of work to come testify. So, yeah, it's definitely a big commitment if these people are wanting to come and engage in the legislative process in that way.
Okay.
So I definitely don't see it as much.
Let's take a call. Jennifer is calling from Columbia. Jennifer, thanks for checking in with the check-in. How are you involved and keeping in touch with the legislative process here in Missouri?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I really enjoy this show. So I am a teacher, so I'm involved with the National Education Association, which is very active with our Missouri legislature through our representative Otto Fagen. And so through National Education Association, NEA, we get reports back from Otto sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes more than once a day, because he's keeping us abreast of all of the issues that are coming up. And then we are usually looking at them through the lens of how what is happening at our legislature and how it affects public education. So okay. That's where our emphasis is. But then he usually will get us up to date on some other issues as well. And then also NEA will organize Capitol Action Days for teachers to go to the Capitol and try to meet with our representatives. And so I believe that NEA does such a wonderful job trying to promote that connection between public educators and our legislature, and understanding that we need to work together.
All right. Jennifer, thank you so much for calling from Columbia with that. And education and public education is very much on our agenda. We want to hit that coming up in the hour. So, Jennifer, I hope you'll stay in tune and stay in touch. And call us back later in the hour if you have something to say when we get into that. Let me just welcome really quickly before, because we do need to go to a break here in a few minutes. But Professor Mark Horvath, welcome to the check-in.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
It's nice to have you back. Mark, let me just get your reaction on what we're talking about so far. What do you see as a longtime journalist covering the Capitol that everyday people and listeners might miss when it comes to what you see in the Capitol corridors?
Well, I mean, it's been a weird session. Last year was even weirder. But one of the reasons that there hadn't been as many people coming down is because of COVID. And actually this week, it's just started to get back to normal. There was a huge rally out here from some pro-life folks. The halls, everybody was super crowded. There were school groups for the first time in 2 years who were touring the building. So you're absolutely right. I mean, there's all sorts of people who in normal times come through the building, and anybody is welcome to come down. I'd also just quickly say you talked about the building being intimidating, and it completely is when you first get here. But if you spend much time, you quickly learn that these are citizen lawmakers. And so the folks mm-hmm. who are making the decisions and changing your life are just people exactly like you. They have other jobs. They do other things. So the more time you spend here and the more you watch how things work, the less intimidating it gets, and the more you realize they're just citizens like you who happen to have gotten elected, but they certainly wield a lot of power when they're here.
Okay, that's a great reminder, Mark Horvitt. Thank you so much for saying that. We're talking about the weird and the wonderful in state government here on The Check-In. We're going to get into it with Mark Horvitt, into all these issues coming up here on The Check-In. You have time to join us, 573-882-4991. What do you want those citizen lawmakers to be working on for us? Let us know, 573-882-4991. You will be next, and we'll be with Mark Horvitt back here on The Check-In after this.
Listen to The Check-In every Thursday at noon Central Time. Join host Janet Saidi for live conversations on community, connection, and the issues we all face in our day-to-day lives. Each week, we'll have a new guest and topic of choice, and we want to hear from you. You can call in live to be a part of the conversation or tweet us at checkin_KBIA. Can't catch the show live? Subscribe to The Check-In podcast on Apple Music or wherever you get your podcasts. Before we get back to Janet, Hannah France also spoke with our other producer, Trevor Hook, about her experience at the Capitol.
I say this a lot, but it actually kind of reminds me of high school sometimes, just as, like, because of just how people are, you know, sort of walking to classes almost, like, with each other, and people are talking to each other outside of the hearings or even in the hearings sometimes. Yeah, but just the general feeling is that it's very busy. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving parts.
Over there, there's the Senate going here. And though the House is in the House, sometimes the Senate, though they're close, they're
so this is the first legislative session I've ever covered. So I've only been doing this since about late January, early February. The hearing itself is really more of a spectacle or like a ceremonial thing than I think it is actually like important that every senator or representative pay very close attention to what's being said, because people are walking in and out of the hearings, both, you know, the people who are coming to witness and testify and the lawmakers themselves. Everyone's moving around the whole time. It's really hard for everyday people to be involved in the legislative process. I mean, obviously, like, we can all vote during elections, and that's probably the main way that people think of, you know, being involved in government and politics. But there are a lot of people who come to testify who aren't lobbyists or aren't, you know, just representatives from an organization, but who are actual just people coming to represent themselves and to testify on behalf of themselves or their children or their communities. These senators and these representatives, these lawmakers, have so many hearings in a day, probably, or like so many things that they need to do. But for people who are coming to testify, this might be the only thing that they're doing that day. And they might be, you know, solely focused on this one bill, whereas lawmakers have hundreds of bills to focus on. There's a lot of jokes that get cracked during hearings that go over my head, because I'm pretty sure they're inside jokes between lawmakers, like senators and representatives. So I guess I think that's kind of cute, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, they're talking about, especially when a hearing goes shorter than they were expecting, they have a field day with that. They'll be like, in a record 12 minutes and 39 seconds, I would like to make a motion to adjourn this meeting, and they're having a field day with it. I think that people should know that they don't have to testify in person. I didn't know that. You can submit written testimony. It's a big sacrifice for a normal everyday person to come to Jeff City and testify on an issue that they feel like is important, on a bill that they either, you know, support or oppose for a reason that's probably very personal to them. And honestly, it'll probably have no more or less weight and consideration than a in-person testimony has, just because of the nature of the hearings. We talk about Capitol buildings being the house of the people, right? You know, obviously, the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C., that's what they say, is, you know, this is the house of the people. And I guess state capitals are like that to on a smaller scale, the houses of the people of the state.
Now, back to Janet.
Hi, this is The Check-In. Thanks for being here. So we are talking about the legislature. Mark Horvat, a big question for you. What are the misconceptions that people tend to have if they don't walk the corridors all the time like you do in Jeff City that you find?
That's a really good question. I think in general, people don't really understand how the process works. And a lot of people might think that it's, just to be frank, more noble than it sometimes is. But there are a few important things, I guess, to know. First of all, it is entirely possible to reach your lawmaker, to get your voice heard, and to talk to people. It's also important to understand that if you just sort of ever, since COVID, you can actually pay a lot more attention than you could before, because they're now streaming most of the hearings, maybe all of the hearings, and the full House and the full Senate online. So if there's a subject coming up that you're interested in, you can actually at least listen to or watch it from wherever you are, which wasn't the case only a year or two ago. But I think people, the main thing I think people don't understand is all the forces that go on behind the scenes, and that oftentimes when someone says something or votes a certain way on something, it doesn't always have a lot to do with what that specific bill or issue might be, but on the things that are happening behind the scenes or on pressures they might be getting from a variety of people, whether it's their constituents or lobbyists, or even sometimes campaign supporters.
Okay. Yeah, Mark, I love what you're saying. And you were actually saying that just before our break. It looks intimidating. It's not that intimidating. It's very accessible. It is built for you and me and for all of us. Mark, we're getting some calls in. Let's go to Katie calling from Columbia. Katie, thanks for checking in with us on The Check-In. How do you get involved with the legislature?
I just want to reinforce what you're saying, that this is our government and it really relies on individual citizens getting involved. You don't have to be a constitutional law expert. You don't have to have some huge background in legalese and know exactly all the ins and outs of every issue. You can just call or email or write a letter or show up to your legislator and any legislator in Missouri's door and tell them how you feel. And they really need that feedback, because if the only time they get told what to do is in the voting booth, you've really missed your opportunity to have them know how you feel and how you want them voting. And there are people who are, you know, interested in voting that are paid to be there every day. And if citizens don't get involved, then the decisions that are made are not actually going to reflect what the will of the people is. I've been up there several times. I'm a home birth midwife, and making sure women have access to home birth in the state and midwifery services has been sort of an ongoing struggle. And you just have to show up. You just have to go in. You don't have to be perfect and polished and high powered. You can just go in there and tell them what you want them to hear.
All right, Katie, thanks so much for letting us know. And you anticipated my next question, which is, how have you been there and what have you been involved in? So you would say that you have enjoyed the experience and you recommend it. People go to the Capitol, get involved, observe a hearing, and maybe even testify. And you've testified at a hearing, it sounds like?
I've observed hearings. I've never personally testified, but, you know, the home birth midwives used to have something called Cookie Day, where we would all go up, and most organizations are going to have sort of days that they ask you to focus your attention, or issues that come up that they ask you to send in your feedback to legislators. And, you know, you just go around and you just approach them. They're just like you and me. They want to hear from you. It can feel a little intimidating, and I'm sure I definitely had some nerves the first few times, but just kind of get over that and get involved, because, you know, voting is important, but it's one of the least powerful ways that we affect change. We really got to stay engaged if we want our democracy to be healthy.
Okay, Katie, thanks so much for letting us know. Love hearing from somebody who's actually been to the legislature as a citizen involved and watching those hearings. Mark Horvitt, another question that's coming up. The Missouri legislature is currently attempting to remove voter-approved funding for Medicaid expansion. This is a big one that's going on. The additional funding would allow about 275,000 more Missourians to get health coverage. There has never been a time that this issue has been more important and more present for all of us. And voters approved this last August. Mark, what's going on with the legislature considering or, you know, making some moves that they don't want to fund this, that voters have approved this funding for the Medicaid expansion? What's going on with that?
Sure. And in fact, it was just debated again on the House floor this morning.
Okay.
The basic issue is this.
Yes.
Basic issue is this. Voters approved the constitutional amendment last year, but there's no specific wording in the constitutional amendment about funding Medicaid expansion. And so one could argue that when you vote in favor of expanding Medicaid, you're also voting to pay for it. But there was no specific wording or mechanism in the constitutional amendment about how to do that. This is pretty much a bipartisan issue. So Republicans are saying that there was no funding provided for this, there was no funding mechanism, and they argue that it's fiscally irresponsible to put more money into Medicaid. The state already spends by far the largest portion of its budget on Medicaid already, without expansion. More than 30% of the state budget already goes toward Medicaid. So it's legitimately a very expensive thing. However, So Republicans are arguing that it would be fiscally irresponsible to do what the voters wanted. Some of them argue it was special interests. They'll make arguments that it didn't pass by that much. They'll make arguments that voter turnout wasn't very heavy, though that was intentional when the governor moved the election to August to potentially tamp down turnout. On the other side, Democrats are arguing that it's the will of the people. It should be done. And there is a case to be made that if you're going, and it is, you know, it's expensive. It's mostly federal money. It's about $1.9 billion, the cost of Medicaid expansion. The vast majority of that money is federal money, but there is some state money that goes into it. The argument at the moment, in addition to the will of the voters, is that because we've gotten so much COVID relief money from the federal government, and because Missouri's economy is doing fairly well in comparison to a lot of other states that have gotten similar aid, that the state has the money right now to make this transition and do the expansion. But okay, that's sort of the pressure point in the debate.
Okay, well, we want to break this down, Mark, because I know I've got a 90% on my mind. There's 90% of expenses apparently covered by the federal government for Medicaid expansion. And I'm hearing that we have a little bit of a surplus, like you're saying, we're not doing too badly with the Missouri budget right now. I also hear you saying it's bipartisan, but I know that a lot of things are more partisan in their approach. So I want to get into all of this with you, Mark Horvitt, and hear your perspective. But first, let's go to a caller, because we have a caller. Sean is calling from Columbia, who also wants to talk about Medicaid expansion. Sean, thanks for calling us on the check-in.
Hi, thanks for having me. My question is this. I've lived in this state for 10 years. I have seen the GOP continually attack and underfund working class people's budgets. I think we've seen overall the standard of living in the state of Missouri decline considerably. Hmm. I work in healthcare, and I think one of the primary examples of how irresponsible this state legislature is based on the fact that Mark had mentioned, the referendum that was put in place, that was passed overwhelmingly statewide by voters, did not have fiscal language in it because we don't control the budget. It's not our responsibility to reallocate funds. It's our responsibility to say, yes, we would like it. Now, how that relates to my position where I work is what you see is the continual pitfalls and the shortcomings of a budget that really puts patients last. And it's really unfortunate because when patients leave a hospital and they need services and something that Medicaid could easily cover, mm-hmm. and those services are not provided, what we're doing is we're putting a Band-Aid on a whole body septic injury.
Okay.
And it's really unfortunate because this perpetuates an endless cycle of health inequalities. This particularly affects people of color. COVID has particularly affected people of color, Black and Latina people as well. So what we're seeing with the GOP is just essentially what I'm seeing is a racist policy, number one. Number two, an anti-worker policy, but also just a general disdain for people who are not extremely wealthy.
Okay.
And this is why we have such a terrible situation right now. So
all right.
How can we call ourselves a democratic state by ignoring that referendum?
Okay, Sean,
I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you so much, Sean. I appreciate you bringing all of that up. And I think what Sean is saying, a lot of people are thinking, Mark Corbett, what do you say to what Sean is saying? Let me say specifically about the Medicaid expansion. We got off on kind of a big picture, which I don't think is off too much, but that's a big picture. But let me kind of go into the detail where we started with that, which is Medicaid expansion. You know, Sean saying there's a lot of politics going on. I feel like this is what a lot of people feel like about our politics and our political system. There's a lot of politics. There's a lot of posturing. You know, even looking at this Medicaid stuff, the voters approved it. It's constitutional. Are the legislators really going to take away that funding, or are they actually just wanting to send a message? And if so, is that a waste of time and energy when we could really be solving problems about our health care that Sean's bringing up? What do you say to all of that, Mark?
Well, first of all, I don't think the House members are sending a message. I mean, they've taken the money out of the budget. So unless the Senate puts the money back in, which is possible, unless the Senate puts the money back in, it's not going to be there in the budget,
okay.
At least not right now. There are things that could be done. They could hold a special session to add funding, because one of the issues is Medicaid still expands, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the voters expanded the parameters, which simply means that the income levels that you can qualify for Medicaid for will expand, allowing those extra people in. But if there's not extra funding for it, what that does is dilute the pool of available Medicaid money among more people.
So this is more, this is real money. You feel like they are taking, it's more than political posturing. There's real money at stake here that we could lose, that the Missouri could lose that. What do you say, Mark, about the 90% of expenses? You're saying it is very expensive. I appreciate that. What do you say to those who say 90% of this is actually covered by the federal government?
Actually, I think at the moment, because of a move that the president made, it's more than 90% if you do it right now because of COVID. I believe the mm-hmm. match is even a little better if the state chose to take advantage of it right now.
Right.
Yeah, it's mostly federal money. And this was one of the debates when it was on the ballot. The question is, ultimately, there's an argument that's made that the state actually saves money long term by expanding Medicaid, because yes, you get the federal money, which provides most of the care. But if you get more people receiving medical care early and able to go to the doctor on a regular basis, they remain healthier, their conditions don't escalate to the point where they suddenly show up at hospitals needing care, which can't be denied, and which creates other financial hardships. What the Republican side, the other side, is arguing is that even if it's federal money, it's still taxpayer money, it's still an irresponsible spending of money, and we shouldn't take it. That's one of the arguments that's come up, but that is not the impact on the Missouri budget is much smaller than that $1.9 billion.
Mark, I just wanted to ask a quick question, though, before we go to the break. A couple of our callers have brought up that citizen involvement and the engagement. Do you feel like the citizen involvement really impacts the legislators in your observation? One of our callers was saying that if you're just voting, you're not showing up. They won't necessarily take your views into account. Do you find that citizen engagement and people actually visiting the Capitol having a difference?
I think the honest truth is sometimes, and only sometimes. I think one of the reasons that you're seeing pushback against Medicaid expansion is that even though it passed by about 53%, there were many districts in which it failed.
Okay.
And so many of these lawmakers who may only care about their voters, the people who keep them in office and the people they represent, look at that and say, my district didn't support it. So so there is an advantage, first of all, just to voting, of course. But, you know, for when people show up, I think if you want to be strategic, if you choose to come down to the Capitol and you want to lobby lawmakers, I would recommend two things. First of all, it makes sense to lobby the lawmakers who represent your area because you vote for them and they care what you and your neighbors think because it keeps them in office. And you know, nobly, they're there to represent you, theoretically. And secondarily, look and see. Every lawmaker has their own areas of interest, the things they care about. And if you look for the lawmakers who care about the issues you care about, then hearing from you and hearing your perspective can make a big difference. So I would say that if you're thoughtful about what you do and thoughtful about who you go to, but also the reality of the situation is there were a ton of people down here yesterday for the pro-life cause. There will be pro-choice people who will be down here. There will be people who support gun rights. There will be people who oppose gun rights. In a normal session, every day there's people knocking on lawmakers' doors and telling them what they want them to do. So to cut through that clutter, I think you have to be a little thoughtful about who you reach out to and where they already come from, because you're kind of unlikely to change anybody's minds on fundamental issues.
All right. We are cutting through the clutter here on The Check-In with Mark Horvat, longtime journalist and professor who teaches how to cover the Capitol as well as covering the Capitol here on The Check-In. We've got callers. We're going to take your calls. You can join us 573-882-4991. These are your elected officials. It's your legislative session. What do you want to see done with it? What do you think about some of these issues we're going to break down after this?
Listen to The Check-In every Thursday at noon Central Time. Join host Janet Saidi for live conversations on community, connection, and the issues we all face in our day-to-day lives. Each week, we'll have a new guest and topic of choice, and we want to hear from you. You can call in live to be a part of the conversation or tweet us at checkin_KBIA. Can't catch the show live? Subscribe to The Check-In podcast on Apple Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Check-In. I'm Janet Saidi. We are talking about our legislative session, your legislative session. I want to go to Cindy. Cindy is calling from Jefferson City. Cindy, thanks for calling The Check-In. What are you thinking about?
You are quite welcome. I've been thinking about Medicaid expansion for a long time. I was a nonprofit director for about 30 years here in Missouri, now retired. And I've been working on Medicaid expansion since 2010 when the Affordable Care Act first passed. And what I really want to speak to is this misunderstanding and this falsehood that Missouri can't afford Medicaid expansion. You know, 39 states have already passed Medicaid expansion. And of those 39 states, each one had an opportunity to opt out if it was too expensive, and not a single one has made that choice. Also, the Office of Administration here in Missouri made a comprehensive study of the fiscal impact of Medicaid expansion back in 2017. And what they found was that we would actually make money and have more money going into general revenue. And the reason for that, one, is that we have taxes that are being paid now, corporate taxes and other taxes that are going to the federal government, and that money is being portioned out to those other states that have already expanded Medicaid. So essentially, we're financing health care for people over in Arkansas or in California or Minnesota when we could be helping our people right here.
Okay.
And okay, in recent years, we've seen a number of rural hospitals closing down. And if we pass Medicaid expansion, money would be available to keep those hospitals open. And, you know, in those rural communities, sometimes that's the largest employer.
All right, Cindy,
Go ahead.
Let me just say, Cindy, thank you so much for this. You're bringing up a lot of really important issues. We have a lot of phone calls that we want to get through, but it sounds like you're very well informed about this. You're keeping your eye on it, and you're bringing up, you know, a really important question. So let's get a comment. Let's get a reaction from Mark Horvitt here, who really kind of follows this analysis. Mark, you know, Cindy's pointing out something that she's basically making the argument, can Missouri afford not to take this when so much money is on the table for this? It's not, you know, frivolous. This is about basic health care. And I'm just going to ask this question, even as a journalist, as someone who's more on the analysis side, who doesn't really want to take a side. But it seems like health care and Medicaid should be something that we can all agree on, that does get polluted by the partisanship a little bit. So what, basically, Mark, what do you say to Cindy's question about the expenses and also my question, I guess, about the general approach to something like health care?
Sure. So, yes, the state's definitely leaving federal money on the table. There's no question about that. And whether the state can afford it or not has been a topic of discussion. There are studies that show that, like I said, that there probably would be a cost to the state initially in rolling it out, but that ultimately the experience that many states have had is that it does pay for itself over the long term. And again, that's one of the reasons that some Democrats are arguing we should do this now, because we have the surplus of funding. Missouri's been through several really, really tight budget years. This is the first year I've been down here where budget cuts aren't the primary conversation. In fact, they're not being discussed at all. So that's definitely the only thing I would also say is that when you talk about making healthcare a priority, it's true that the state already spends the largest chunk of its budget on Medicaid. So it's not a question of whether healthcare is being provided. It's a question of how much. And, you know, that's a decision that every individual has to make, is when you have money, where do you want to allocate it? Which needs do you want to fund? Mm-hmm. The Republicans have taken some of the money that would have gone towards Medicaid expansion. And in fact, today, the House approved a bill that took some of that money and put it towards other social service programs, which one could say, well, at least it's going to help people somehow. Other people could say perhaps, but that's not what we asked you to do with it.
Okay. Mark, thank you so much for outlining that. That's really good analysis. You know, I hear you saying there, you know, just as a journalist, really kind of digging into these things. And I've read your Missourian reporters on these things, too, and they do such a great job. Yes, there's politics involved, but there's also a real cost involved and real discussions that are legitimate about the cost of Medicaid. But you're also saying that a lot of those show that that it does pay for itself. So I think we can see that people can make their decisions. Let me ask you something, Mark. We've got some calls waiting. We are going to take your calls, but I want to get from Mark Horvitt this education bill. We've got in the legislature $17 million in a bill that would go to charter schools. It's actually money that it sounds like would be taken away from traditional public schools. So taking away that money to put onto charter schools, what does this mean for public education in Missouri, Mark?
Well, there are several bills that are sort of all grouped loosely in what they're calling school choice bills. And
yes,
charter expansion is sort of the biggest of those. And it's not clear if that's actually going to get through this year. But basically what charter expansion would do allow, right now, charter schools are only allowed in St. Louis area and Kansas City area. It was going to expand them statewide, but there are a lot of Republican rural lawmakers that don't want charter schools in their communities. We'll talk about why in just a second. So now it would only affect communities of 30,000 people or more, which includes Columbia, for example. And the reason that rural lawmakers from both parties oppose charter expansion is the fear that it will take money away from public schools. The main way that charter expansion takes money away from those schools, though, is that schools are paid on a per student basis. Much of the reimbursement that goes to school districts is based on the number of pupils, the number of kids you've got. And so if charter schools come in, and those are still public schools, and students leave public schools for the charter schools, the money that was there for those kids goes to the charter school. The public funding moves. Only the schools still have to provide the same base level of services they always had. They still have to have classes in all topic areas. They still have to provide all the services. They just have fewer kids and, by extension, less government money coming in to help support that effort. So that's where a lot of the tension lies in charter expansion.
Okay, I appreciate that, Mark Horvitt. Let's go to Elizabeth calling in Columbia. Elizabeth, how are you doing, and what's on your mind when it comes to the state legislature?
Well, hi, I'm calling from Columbia, and I've lived here, well, close to 20 years, and I wanted to second the earlier caller, Sean, who was saying that it does feel like the legislature is basically undemocratic. And honestly, I have testified at the legislature before on gun control bills, and
okay.
I'm not really calling about that. I'm calling more about the Medicaid expansion and just certain legislators, which happen. I mean, I think it's kind of a majority of legislatures who have a kind of a disdain or even contempt for the city of Columbia and its people, and also the University of Missouri. And I just feel like they. I mean, there's one legislator who represents the city of Columbia, or, you know, part of her district, Sherry Tolson Reich, part of her district is in Columbia, and she's afraid to come to Columbia without toting a gun. And, I mean, she didn't want to, she forced the city to allow people to carry guns so that she'd come and meet her own, the people she represents. She's afraid of the people she represents, and I just, it really bothers me that there are people like that in the legislature.
All right, Elizabeth, I can hear the emotion in your voice. I hear your frustration. Thank you for calling us with that. And thanks for your engagement as a citizen. And thanks for your engagement here as a neighbor with us on the check-in. We appreciate your call. Let me just hear what, Mark, what you have to say about that. Elizabeth mentions the word disdain for people in Columbia and the University of Missouri. Mark, I've heard about this from your observation. Is this a real thing that a lot of the legislators from more rural areas, and they are also our neighbors, and we are in rural areas as well as in Columbia with the check-in. But do you feel like there's a rural-urban divide going on in our legislature that you see?
So, yeah, there's definitely a rural-urban divide in the legislature, in the country. I mean, the issues are just some issues are universal, but many of them are separate. For example, you're seeing in that charter school example that it splits the Republican Party because charter expansion isn't popular in rural areas, which are almost exclusively represented by Republicans in this state. Okay. So there are cases where those rural issues separate even people who otherwise vote together on just about everything else. As far as disdain goes, Mizzou was having a much harder time of it getting funding in the legislature a few years ago. Much of that has been tamped down, and there's probably more support for the UM system in Jeff City than most people think. But when budget times are tough, higher education is one of the few areas that's, just to be honest, easy to cut because of the way the budget works. And so when things get tight again, I would expect to see UM become a target again for funding.
Okay, well, Mark, let me jump in right there. I think that's really interesting. But we've got a couple of callers. Let me go to Alice in Columbia. Alice, how are you doing? What's on your mind when it comes to the state legislature?
I just wanted to, I heard a discussion from John Rizzo, the Democratic Senate leader, where he talked about, to my Democratic Club, that there are 8 to 10 Republicans out of the 24 Republicans, I think that's what it is, who actually can be swayed to vote with Democrats on issues if they get enough citizen push. And the most important person there for us from Columbia and for the state is our state senator, Cal Broden. Mm-hmm. So on Medicaid, the message is we have to support the governor's budget. What's going on? Why aren't we supporting the governor's budget? So that's my statement.
Great question, Alice. Thanks for that. And Alice is mentioning our Senator Caleb Rowden, who's been on the check-in. We also had mentioned Sherry Tolson Reich, who is very pro-gun. And she's also been through KBIA. If any of our legislators are listening, they can call in, but we've only got a couple of minutes here on the check-in. But Mark, can you answer Alice's question?
Well, sure. So yeah, there is, the Senate is interesting in that the Republican contingent in the Senate is split. There's a conservative contingent, and then there's the other Republicans, and then there's the Democrats. So it's one reason that the Senate, which is already a deliberative body, it's much harder to get legislation through there, in part because the unity that you usually see among the Republicans in the House is not as often not there in the Senate. And as far as, you know, as far as the budget goes, yes, the caller was right. Governor Parson did put Medicaid expansion money into the budget, mm-hmm. and the House Republicans took that out. And Senator Rowden hasn't said yet whether the Senate's going to put that money back or not. A lot of people think they will, because this whole thing could end up, likely would end up in court if the legislature stays on its current course.
Okay. Mark, with just a couple more minutes, there's a really important bill that would ban police officers from using troll cults. It's, I believe, moving on to the House for a vote. What do you think is likely to happen with that bill? Is it likely to make it through the House? And what effect is this likely to have, do you think, on local police departments?
Yeah, I think it's going to pass. It's a bipartisan bill. It got strong support in the Senate. There have been police chiefs who came down to the Capitol to testify in favor of it. So, yeah, I do think it's going to pass. It got added to a bill, however, which has lots of other measures which are troubling some folks, who including because it creates some other protections and things for law enforcement officers that some people feel aren't necessary. But now it's been bundled in one big package. I do think that's going to pass. And really what it's going to do is just spell out specifically what officers can. It doesn't completely ban chokeholds. It just says that there are only certain cases in which they can be used. And so I guess the idea is that it makes it clearer what's permissible and what's not, and makes it clearer what penalties you'd face if you use that incorrectly.
All right, Mark, we only have about 60 seconds here, so this is really unfair, but I just want to give you a few seconds to address anything that we haven't addressed. We've had a lot of callers. I really appreciate all of you check-in neighbors calling in and joining our conversation, but it's moved very quickly. Mark, what have we missed? What would you like people to keep in mind as citizens, all of us, as the legislature plays out in the next couple of weeks?
Sure. There are a lot of it. The thing to keep in mind is that state government really affects your life in many ways much more than the federal government does, even though people tend to pay more attention to Congress.
Yeah.
Your life is more directly impacted by what they do here in Jefferson City. So it's really in your interest to pay attention to what's going on, read the news coverage, listen to KBIA for this, explore things on your own. But the actions that happen here directly impact the way your kids are educated, the health care that you get, the safety for you and your neighbors in all sorts of ways. And so the environmental protections, we haven't even talked about those, but there are measures that are making mm-hmm. their way through on that. So really, it's just incumbent on all of us to pay attention to what's going on and, speak up while you have a chance, and remember when it comes time to vote what these folks have done and whether you like that or not.
Excellent last words, Mark Horvath. Thanks so much for joining us on the check-in, and we know you'll come back and join us again soon. Mark Horvath is the director of Missouri School of Journalism's State Government Reporting, and I have to say, I don't think I even mentioned the Columbia Missourian. Check out his reporting and his team's reporting that he oversees with the Columbia Missourian.
Thank you for listening to the check-in. After our show, Mark Horvath, director of Mizzou's State Government Reporting Program, answered a couple more of our questions. The very first thing, so we talked and touched on charter schools during the episode of the check-in, but a big conversation that surrounds charter schools is a discussion about parent choice, which is the debate whether parents or schools should have more of a say in their kids' education. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little more about that conversation and what people are saying.
Sure. And there are other bills that are frankly more likely to pass this session than charter expansion, though it still could. The overriding issue is exactly that. There are a number of people in the legislature who believe that parents deserve to have more choice and shouldn't be locked into the school that their kids are zoned to. And so there are a couple of different, one bill which is already almost made it all the way through, would allow parents to select different public schools, not charter schools, but you'd have the ability to shop sort of school districts. In one version of the bill, which was actually on the House today, you'd have to have some kind of property and pay some amount of property taxes in another district, and then you could just send your kids there. In other versions, it's less restrictive, but that's one version of choice. Still public schools, but selecting your public school. Another one are education savings accounts, or ESAs, and that would allow you to put money away and donate money to accounts that could then be used by people to select a private school or another school to send their kids to help make that more economically feasible. The idea there is theoretically, it makes it not just somebody with wealth who could do it. All of those measures, though, do the same thing of taking students from one public school to somewhere else. So they all run against the same opposition in the people who believe that that's going to be bad for public schools because of the funding that moves with the students.
And if, let's say, people are allowed to pick which school their kids are going, one, would they be provided transportation for those schools? And if, for example, like, let's say a bunch of families pick the best school in Kansas City and all of the parents go to send their kids there, does that just mean that we're going to have one giant school as opposed to a bunch of small ones?
You know, the latest version of the school choice bill actually included an amendment, I believe it was an amendment, but it includes a provision to provide a scholarship fund for transportation for parents who would need it. I don't know how much money would be in it, and I don't know if that part would pass, but that has at least been brought up and discussed. I also believe, I'd have to go back and read the legislation, but I believe that there are caps and a school couldn't be overrun with people. But that is the general concern, is that what you'd have a few schools that already have the most, the nicest facilities, the whatever it might be, would grow and get stronger and stronger and potentially get more parents who'd be more active in the PTA, which brings in more private funding and all those other things. And other schools that are already maybe hurting a little bit would be left to languish. So that is the overriding concern.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about, we've seen, especially in the news recently, a lot of legislation being passed about trans children and different laws that are going through that. And I know that there are two trans bills that are currently making their way through the legislature. And my question for you, one of them is about whether trans kids should be able to play in sports. And then the other one is about receiving trans-based medical care. And so I was wondering, with this huge conversation about parents' choice and who should take priority over determining a child's future, does that play into trans children and their legislation, or is this just an exclusive school situation?
So if you're looking for consistency among lawmakers, you're going to be sorely disappointed. In general, I'm not sure these issues are quite apples to apples, but the issue of, so the first of all, if I were, I don't expect these bills to get through the legislature this session. It could happen. They're there. But I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll find out. There are a couple that have gotten pretty clear. There's one that's waiting to be debated on the House floor, which could happen. But even if it gets through the House, it then has to go all the way over to the Senate, make it through that whole gauntlet. And time is starting to get tight. And so sometimes it comes down to legislators' priorities. And I don't know if these bills are a big enough priority for a large enough number of people to make it. But regardless of that, the issue of choice, of course, the arguments that are made against these bills are different depending on the two bills. The bill on athletics is an issue of, and I'm not taking this argument, I'm simply making this argument, explaining it, which is, please, everyone understand, that's different. The argument in the athletics bill is that you have an unfair advantage if you were previously identified as a male and are now transitioning to female and you get to participate in athletics along with women who are, there's a fear that that would create an unlevel playing field. There are many questions about this, including how many people there even are that are doing this in the first place, and whether or not as kids go through this process, if those advantages remain. But that's the argument there, is that it's an unfair playing field. The argument on the healthcare issue is that these are decisions and procedures that can either permanently or significantly affect somebody physically, mentally, in other ways, and that you should have to be 18 before you, so you can yourself consent as an adult to go through the procedure. So there are arguments on both. Again, I'm not making them, I'm just explaining them.
And what do you think is their probability of these two getting passed this legislation?
I don't think so. I really don't. One of the bills, which was actually sponsored by Chuck Basie, who's from Mid-Missouri, would put a constitutional amendment vote on the trans athlete issue. And that's the one that's closest right now. I don't think, I could be wrong, and something might make it through the House, maybe. I think the odds of something making it through the House and Senate this session are pretty slim. But for those who care about those issues, you want to remain vigilant because you never know.
And that brings me to my next question, which is, I know we're talking, and we talked a little bit about this on the show as well, but how attentive should Missourians be towards legislation when most of it isn't going to make it to the floor or even pass?
Sure. Well, yeah, just to give some perspective to that, more than 2,000 bills are proposed in an average year in the Missouri legislature, fewer than 200 pass in an average year, and about 15 of those are budget bills, 15, 20. So yeah, most legislation's never going anywhere. But in some, it usually takes a few years, but it does make its way through. And sometimes it takes 3 or 4 years, or something like the prescription drug monitoring program, it takes 7 or 8 years. So it's worth paying attention for sure. And learning just a little bit about the process, because it's possible to track these bills and to see where they stand in the system and how far they've gone. The other thing to really watch out for, and this is what's more likely, I mentioned when we were doing the show that the bill about police chokeholds was combined with another bill, and now there's 7 or 8 things in it. That those originally might have been 7 or 8 separate bills. They get combined. That happens all the time. So as we get closer to the session, just theoretically, one of those trans bills could be added to another bill if you could make the argument that the overall topic is related enough. And a lot of something that big would get noticed, but many times smaller things nobody notices. They're amended to another bill, they're quickly accepted, they're passed, and sometimes everybody misses it. Sometimes even lawmakers don't know what they're doing until it's after the fact. So vigilance is important, but just because somebody's proposed something and it's had a hearing, I'll always get phone calls from people. Oh my gosh, have you seen what they're proposing to do? Well, you know, there's 200 people down there and anybody can write a bill. Anybody can introduce a bill. It doesn't mean anyone else likes it. So it's worth knowing what's going on, but it's certainly not worth panicking unless you see the bill actually moving through the process.
Okay. And then my last question for you would be, you were on the show, we just finished it, and you listened to quite a few of our callers who expressed their own concerns. If you had one thing to say to our listeners, what would it be?
One thing to say. I guess it really is just pay attention. You know, it's not that hard. You can do it online. You don't ever have to go down to Jeff City if you don't want to, but pay attention to what's happening. Know what's going on. And if there's something that really, really troubles you, there are ways you can make your voice heard. As I said during the show, be strategic about how you do that, right? There are some lawmakers that you're not going to convince no matter what, just like they're not going to convince you no matter what. I wouldn't waste my time. But if you can find allies or people who seem to believe similarly to you, let them know you're out there. Let them know it matters to you. Everybody has to decide which things they're going to champion and which ones they're just going to let go. And so you might be able to help make the difference in getting somebody who is on the fence to fight something or to propose an amendment that weakens it or makes it a little bit more palatable or removes the one piece that really troubles you. There are a lot of cases where a law is basically fine with most people, but there's one little bit that could create a real problem, sometimes unintentionally. So finding those things, letting people who might care know about them can actually make a difference.
Okay. All right. That's all the questions I have for you. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot.
That's all for The Check-In. If you liked what you heard today, make sure to follow The Check-In wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your support and we want to hear from you. Do you have any thoughts on today's episode? You can leave us a voicemail at 833-560-1329 or tweet us at checkin_KBIA. The Check-In is produced by Alicia Haywood, Trevor Hook, and Janet Saidi. The student producers, Becca Newton, Hannah France, Fernando Naro, and me, Isabella Paxton. Special thanks to our news director, Ryan Familiner, engineer Mark Johnson, and program director Kyle Felling, directing this week's show. That's all we have for you today. Stay well and stay in touch.